Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an assessment of what the secrets might be that were cherry-picked from the NSA's computers by Edward Snowden before he took them abroad on his computers and on his thumb drives, and whether the Chinese and the Russians have already downloaded them. James Bamford, an investigative journalist who specializes in national security issues and wrote two books about the NSA, The Puzzle Palace and The Shadow Factory, Inside the Ultra-Secret NSA from 9/11 to Spying on America, joins us to discuss the damage control now going on at the NSA. Then, with the American fugitive Edward Snowden apparently delayed in Moscow on his way to Cuba, then on to Ecuador, where he has asked for political asylum, we will look into the possibility that Snowden is being debriefed by the SVR, the Russian foreign intelligence successor to the KGB. A veteran reporter on intelligence, Richard Sale, joins us to discuss what might be going on in Moscow as the U.S. government warns Russian leaders not to jeopardize relations between the two countries by aiding and abetting a fugitive. Then finally, with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange holed up in Ecuador's London embassy, and with representatives of WikiLeaks escorting Edward Snowden on his way to asylum in Ecuador, we will examine the state of press freedom in Ecuador and how that gels with the mission of WikiLeaks, a group that champions freedoms of the press and open access to government secrets. Carlos Loria, the Senior Americas Program Coordinator at the Committee to Protect Journalists who monitors press freedoms in the Americas, joins us. And joining us now is James Bamford, who's an investigative journalist specializing in national security issues. He was the Washington investigative reporter for ABC's World News Tonight and is the author of the best-selling books Body of Secrets, The Puzzle Palace, A Pretext for War, 9/11 Iraq, and the Abuse of American Intelligence Agencies, and The Shadow Factory, Inside the Ultra-Secret NSA, from 9/11 to Spying on America. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Bamford.
Well, thanks, Ian. Good to be here.
And there was a bit of a, I guess, an amusing incident took place at the Moscow airport this morning when a whole bunch of journalists, about two dozen of them, bought tickets on the Monday flight to Havana, which cost them more than $2,000 each for the round trip. And they were dismayed when the seat in row 17 that was assigned to Edward Snowden remained empty as the plane took off. And one can only hope they have a few mojitos in Havana, I guess.
And a few cigars, maybe.
So what are we to make about the whereabouts of Edward Snowden, who is being accompanied by Sarah Harrison, who's a top WikiLeaks lieutenant, apparently a confidant of Julian Assange's. Assange has said in a telephone conference with members of the press today that Snowden's in a safe place and that his spirits are high, but he only would say that he was bound for Ecuador via a safe path through Russia and other states. So, given that the U.S. seems to be leaning on Russia and he hasn't left Russia as far as anybody knows, do you think there's a possibility that the Russians might hand him over?
If I was to bet on this, I would say no, I don't think they will, because they do have a number of outs to use in place of giving him back. First of all, they could claim that he's not technically on Russian territory, since he apparently didn't have a Russian visa, has not left the transit lounge, and so therefore they could say he's just somebody in transit and not technically entered Russia. The other reason is that first of all, we don't have an extradition treaty with Russia. So there's no real obligation, legal obligation, to turn him over. And the third reason is that even countries that have extradition treaties, part of the extradition treaty is that the person be charged with a crime that's also a crime in the country they're seeking to extradite him from. And, you know, turning NSA secrets over to the press is not a crime in Russia. And, you know, if there's a fourth reason, it's that extradition can be avoided if the country determines that the charge is political, and since Snowden is claiming asylum, they could claim that this is a political crime and not a not murder, theft, hijacking, that kind of thing.
And, of course, the Russians are not very happy with the United States for refusing to their repeated request to return Victor Boot, the convicted global arms smuggler who was sentenced to 25 years in prison here last year. But apparently Assange is traveling on a document that was issued by Ecuador that was facilitated.
You mean, not Assange, but
I'm sorry, I mean Snowden, that was arranged by WikiLeaks, that the Ecuadorians have provided him with a refugee document of passage, and that's how he left Hong Kong, and that's the paperwork that he has in terms of Moscow. The U.S., of course, have revoked Snowden's passport, which they did rather late, too. That's kind of surprising, isn't it?
Well, how hard is it to cancel a passport?
Yeah, it's a phone call.
They didn't feel a necessity for canceling it because they knew he was in Hong Kong, but I don't know, maybe nobody told White House there's a thing called airplanes that people can get on and fly other places. I mean, one of the more dramatic ways this may end is if there is a swap where the Russians get the man that they want, Victor Boot, and the Obama administration gets the man they want.
Well, that is a real possibility. I brought up Victor Boot's name for that reason, because it struck me that they clearly want him, and he worked closely with the KGB or the SVR, and Putin apparently has personally intervened on a number of occasions.
That was a very regular occurrence. Well, not regular, but fairly unique occurrences that would take place every few years between Russia and the U.S. during the Cold War. And they would catch a spy, we'd catch a spy, and the two would be exchanged.
On the famous bridge.
That's right.
In
yeah,
Berlin,
exactly.
Yeah. So, again, I'm speaking with James Bamford, an investigative journalist specializing in national security issues. He was the Washington investigative reporter for ABC's World News Tonight, and is the author of the best-selling books Body of Secrets, The Puzzle Palace, A Pretext for War, 9/11 Iraq and the Abuse of American Intelligence Agencies, and The Shadow Factory, Inside the Ultra-Secret NSA from 9/11 to Spying on America. Now, what is Edward Snowden carrying with him? He's got what, four computers and a bunch of thumb drives. According to the interview he did in the South China Morning Post, that he chose the job at Booz Allen because he wanted to collect information, and that he cherry picked a whole bunch of information before he left. Do we know? I mean, I guess, you know, NSA is probably doing some damage control now, but do they know what this guy's what he has on his computers and his thumb drives?
Well, it's been sort of Keystone Cops all along from the very beginning here. They weren't able to detect what he was doing in the first place, even though they had the experience of Bradley Manning, who managed to walk out of Army intelligence offices with nearly a million documents, something like 700,000 documents on CD-ROMs. And they were supposed to have corrected the situation after that, so that's not possible. And here, you know, just a year or so, a couple of years afterwards, they have the Snowden case. And Snowden had plenty of time and also plenty of access to get what he wanted because he had, I guess it was 3 or 3.5 months or something like that at Booz Allen. And he was also a what was called a systems administrator, which is probably apparently the job that he really wanted. That's sort of like in the 60s or whatever, would be the guy walking around with 5 pounds worth of keys hanging from his belt. He's the person that, except now it would be all digital keys, they'd be passwords and so forth. So he's a person with a digital key to everything, and whether or not they could tell what he took depends on how well they're able to do audit on his entry into different computer files and different areas within the agency's most classified sections. He being a fairly skilled systems administrator, he may also have found a way to hide his audit trail, which may be why they didn't catch him in the first place, and may make it quite more difficult to find him after the fact.
So, given that he was this IT guy, and my understanding is that foreign intelligence people look for guys like him because of the very reason. Are you satisfied that there's no way in the world that he was recruited by anybody before he left? And a lot of people are suspicious that he went to Hong Kong. He would have gone there knowing that, you know, having some kind of arrangement with the Chinese in advance.
No, if this was going to be a foreign intelligence operation, what they they could have done sort of the similar thing. They would have had him extract all that classified material. But then they would have had him come down with some disease, make up some reason to leave the agency or sign up for college or go someplace else to work. They would have done something or just kept him there. I mean, they would have done something to prevent anybody from knowing what documents he took out. This could not have been an intelligence operation, because one of the key aspects of an intelligence operation is that the person you're stealing the documents from doesn't know that you're stealing the documents, because once they know what documents that you've stolen, then they could change the whatever the systems are. So I really doubt that. I think it is just on its face what it is. It's a person who was not attuned to the government's eavesdropping on U.S. citizens. I interviewed people like that for a variety of my books, and I did a cover story for Wired magazine last year. I interviewed Bill Binney, a former senior NSA official who'd been there almost 40 years and basically designed the entire eavesdropping system, and he had the same views and pretty much told me the same thing that Edward Snowden has released. In my Wired magazine article, I write about, I quote Benny telling me about how they got access to all of Verizon's metadata and all the access to the Internet and so forth. The difference was he didn't have documents. He just told me about it. Mm-hmm. And a week or so afterwards, the NSA denied a lot of that. The director came out and denied it. So, and Benny, Snowden's mentioned Benny a couple of times, and I think in the context that's the problem, you know, if you just come out and you're just a whistleblower. All the NSA does is deny it, and then the mainstream media largely just adopts whatever the NSA says. So the only way to really prove what's going on is to bring out the proof, bring out the documents. So I think he saw what happened in the past with other whistleblowers, and he didn't want to be one of these people that they just lied their way out of.
Well, already a couple of the senators, Ron Wyden and Mark Udall, have called on the director of the National Security Agency, General Alexander, who's testified, saying that there was a significant inaccuracy in the fact sheet about the agency's use of the law that underpins its internet surveillance program. And already, of course, Clapper essentially lied. The director of National Intelligence lied to the senators in a public hearing after the Guardian revealed that the NSA does indeed collect records of every phone call made in the United States. Clapper was forced to admit that he had given the least untruthful response he could. So that seems to be the way they operate. You know, they tell as little as they could possibly get away with in terms of...
He may say least untruthful. I say most untruthful. I mean, you can put spin on anything, and that sounds like something that comes out of Orwell or something, some newspeak, least untruthful.
Right.
It was a lie. It was simply a lie. The he was asked whether the NSA keeps records on millions of or surveillance files on millions of Americans, and he said no, they didn't. And that's what everybody's phone records are. Everybody's phone records goes to NSA every day, who you called, how long you were on the phone, where you called from, all that material. That's not surveillance data on Americans, I don't know what is.
But in the overall scheme of things, in terms of this NSA leak that came from Edward Snowden, which clearly has riled up the public, it's affected Obama's poll numbers, particularly with those under 30. He's had a 17-point drop in 1 month in that demographic. But is there a lot to it? I mean, in terms of the new information, I mean, it seems to me that we knew most of what came out.
Well, like I mentioned, I've written, three books on NSA, numerous articles, and last year in Wired, I quoted a number of senior former agency officials who turned into, became whistleblowers, Phil Benny, and a number of others. And they, like I said, they said basically the same thing.
Sure.
And they certainly were in a position to know. They were among the most senior people there, and that's what their job was developing this the eavesdropping system. So, it's not new. What's new, however, is to actually see the documents, to actually see a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court order where it specifies that they want all this data from Americans every day, every phone call, even local calls. If your grandmother calls the next-door neighbor in Wichita, Kansas, they want that. And it's going to be there, and they're going to keep it, and they're going to keep it for as long as they want. So what was also surprising to me, which I didn't know, was that they were able to do this through this loophole in the Patriot Act, basically saying that under the rubric of business records, where they get all this data under a simple loophole, basically it says that they can get access to people's business records. And if you ask an average person on the street and you ask them about the business record exceptions, they would probably say, well, you know, that's if you're accused of embezzlement or whatever, then they could go in and get your bank records from the bank or whatever. Nobody would ever assume that one little phrase means you can get everybody's phone records every single day for the rest of their lives.
Right. Well, just in closing, James Bamford, The fact that there wasn't a lot new in what was released, that there was, you know, obviously a political impact of the leaks on the eve of the meeting between Obama and President Xi of China. It was revealed that the U.S. was, it was a presidential finding on Obama targeting a bunch of countries, including China. That clearly embarrassed the U.S. The leak on the eve of the G8 conference about GCHQ spying on the G20. And my understanding is that the four laptops and the thumb drives that he's got with him would be easily both the Chinese and the Russians would be able to access them. So how much has Snowden helped the United States, people of the United States, revealing stuff, and how much has he hurt the United States in terms of other less friendly countries getting hold of all this secret stuff?
Well, one of the other aspects that we hadn't mentioned is he released documents on how the U.S. is aggressively using cyber warfare, basically, to spy on the Chinese. And I just did a new cover story for Wired that coincidentally came out the same time as all this broke. It was a cover story for the July issue of Wired that looks at the it's a cover story on General Alexander, who's the director of the National Security Agency, and it looks at his role as also head of Cyber Command. So Snowden released a number of documents that shed new light also on the whole cyber war aspect of NSA and Cyber Command. But in terms of damage to the U.S., I don't really think there was really any damage to the U.S. for the public to know that the government's getting access to these records, because to these phone records, because it's their records. So they really should have a right to know what the government is doing with their private records. In addition, it can't really do any harm to national security, since I've been writing about terrorists for years and years, if not decades, and I don't think there's any terrorists out there that assumed that the U.S. wasn't eavesdropping on communications with everything that's come out about NSA. So it wouldn't be a surprise to them. It is a big surprise probably to most Americans.
But what about the idea that the Chinese and whatever these secrets that he cherry-picked, they might already be in the hands of both the Chinese and the Russians?
Well, I certainly wouldn't be surprised at that. It's very easy and fairly quick to do some forensic computer work that gives you a mirror image of what's ever on a computer. So if those, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to have known this. He didn't have to deliberately have given them his computers or hard drive or his flash drives or whatever. If he happened to have left them in a hotel room in China or wherever he was staying, that's one of the oldest tricks in the book, is to get access to a hotel room and get copy what's on a computer. So he didn't have to give that information to them. They could have easily gotten it.
Right.
And the same for the Russians, since he's passing through Moscow, and I would think one of the things that they would require is that they take a look at what he's bringing into the country and bringing out of the country and so forth. So it could be quite,
routine,
interesting. What they might have gotten from his electronic machines, whatever he was carrying.
Well, James Bamford, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
My pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with James Bamford, who's an investigative journalist specializing in national security issues. He was the Washington investigative reporter for ABC World News Tonight and is the author of the best-selling books Body of Secrets, The Puzzle Palace, A Pretext for War, 9/11, Iraq, and the Abuse of American Intelligence Agencies, and The Shadow Factory, Inside the Ultra-Secret NSA from 9/11 to Spying on America. And as he mentioned, he has the cover article in the current issue of Wired magazine. We're going to take a brief station break and be back further talking about the fate of Edward Snowden.
Listen, do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell? Whoa, closer. Let me whisper in your ear. Say the words you long to hear.